Welcome to Two Bits, a podcast about coins and currency produced by the American Numismatic Association and hosted by Doug Mudd and Mitch Sanders.
Here we are today with our initial podcast of Two Bits. We're in the middle of the COVID-19 crisis, and one of the things that occurred to Mitch and I as we were talking was, what are people doing to exercise their hobby? I mean, we're stuck at home. We've got our coins with us, presumably, unless they're locked in a bank. How are we meeting with other people and talking about the things that we love to talk about?
Right. I feel the same way, in the sense that so much of the hobby as we experience it, yes, it's about the coins and the currency and the objects that we have, but so much of it is about the connections that we have with other people, whether it's people we see at coin shops, at coin clubs, at coin shows, or in any other fashion. And so much of that is now curtailed. So the natural question is, what are some elements of the hobby that can still be pursued even at a time like this?
Yeah, and one of the things that I've experienced that's different is meeting online, using things like Zoom to try to talk to your friends. I have regularly scheduled meetings with a couple of different clubs or family, and it's been very interesting experimenting with, you know, what everybody's doing and how do you show your coins online. It's sort of hard to do at times, but we've been experimenting with different types of stuff, so it's been an interesting experience.
Yeah, there's some element of show and tell. Like Doug, you and I are on Zoom right now, so I can hold something up to the screen and show you, and you can see it reasonably well, not as if it were in person. It's not the right kind of lighting, and you can't rotate it and see its luster or see every detail of it. So it's not the same, but many of those connections can remain in place. And then for me, the question is, with now a lot more time spent at home, what are some ways in which I can use some of that time on a hobby, the hobby of numismatics, that's so enriching in our lives? And this is a time of crisis. And to the extent possible, we want to maintain those connections with people and institutions and with interests that we have in order to keep that going and have some element of that brought in, even in the current situation. Actually, something that I wanted to ask you about, because you're in such a perfect position to talk about it. One thing that I enjoy doing, many people enjoy doing, is traveling and seeing different sites around the world, seeing museums around the world in particular. And to me, it's always been a pilgrimage to go to the Money Museum at the American Numismatic Association. I've been fortunate enough to be there on several occasions. But now, through the internet and the technology that you all have developed and implemented to present the museum's holdings, there's so much more that can be done. So there's virtual exhibits, special collections, the general collection. What would you recommend to people who are looking to pursue numismatics at a distance with respect to the Money Museum?
Well, that's one of the great things that has occurred over just the last few years, Mitch. Basically, I've been working with my staff to try to convert our regular exhibits. So these are exhibits that we put on display in a traditional way. They're in cases, they've got text panels, labels, all sorts of things. And every piece is photographs. So this provides a basis of data that can be converted easily to digital format. I've been working on this idea since basically 2002, when I was working with the Smithsonian on a project to digitize a part of the numismatic collections of the Saudi Arabian National Museum. And at that time, the webmaster for the Smithsonian was interested in doing these new types of photography, basically setting up a camera and doing a 360 view all around. So he'd have it on a tripod and take pictures here, and then stitch them all together with new software to create a 360 surround view, sort of a panorama that's connected all the way around, so that using a computer, you could actually look in all different directions and it's the same image. It occurred to me that, wow, we could do that inside a display and you can walk around. And that's the kind of thing that real estate agents and others were starting to do at that time. But I wanted to take it further. Hey, let's walk up to a case and look inside that case and take an image of a coin and blow it up so we could actually study it. One of the elements that's been added to the money.org website over the last few years is a 3D tour of the museum exhibits. So you can actually go onto our website and walk through the library and the upper and lower galleries and see every case, all of the items that are on display. And in most cases, you can go up to the case. Not only can you get an enlargement of the panel to read all the text, you can also go into the case and see each coin as it's laid out on the decks and have them blown up. This is an amazing opportunity that I don't know how you feel about it, but I need to wear glasses nowadays for viewing anything close up. And It makes it very difficult when you go to a museum, aside from lighting issues, which are always a problem. And I've worked very hard over the years to improve lighting and make sure that coins could be seen as best as possible. But that doesn't really help for a situation where you've got 50-year-old eyes trying to view a 1-inch item through a 6-inch or 12-inch case. So,
right.
So that's a great advantage in these days.
The ability to photograph is iffy. The ability to see it with the naked eye is iffy. But if it's there on the screen in all its clarity, then that's a view that you wouldn't be able to get any other way, because it would be lit as appropriate for photography and for bringing out all the details of the coin and showing it in just the way you would want it to be seen. And then in addition to the in-person experience, you can have that experience of seeing it in that fashion, far better than my blurry photographs of coins that I've attempted to take around the world at various museums. I also noticed, and I was just looking at this recently, that in the Money Museum's online collection, there's in addition to the special collections like the BB paper money and the Bass material gold and other things, there's a search function. The first time I went to it, I'm interested in coins of Peru, so I searched for Peru, and I don't know, 200 things came up where I could look at photos of individual items. But then there was a cool feature, which was, I forget the exact name, but it was basically something like, show me a bunch of random images of things from the collection. And I did that a bunch of times, and it's really interesting. That's part of how you discover new things, is by these random encounters. Sometimes it's at a coin show and you're looking at one thing and your eye is caught by something else, or you hear reference to something at random that someone else mentions, or you see it in a coin shop. Those things are not happening so much, but just random imagery is a nice way to get some ideas, things that look interesting that you might not have known about before. Whoever thought of that randomized imagery, excellent idea. I really like it.
Yeah, I agree. That's the kind of thing that really allows you to discover things. And that's one of the neat things about the money.org site right now. We've made it a little bit easier to search for things. So you can look for museum exhibits, virtual exhibits online at the museum pull-down menu. But there are other areas within the site where you can learn more. That's part of where our education material is located. And find things like Tales from the Vault. So we have stories, not quite random, but fairly random, about various things that myself or Andy Dick, as our collection manager, has decided it is really interesting. And we write up a short description and story about why they're interesting, add images. So you can find things about things like French assignats from the French Revolution. You can find stories about the Cocos Islands, tokens that were issued in the late 19th and early 20th centuries. Some really amazing things that in most cases people haven't been exposed to at all. So it's a lot of fun to explore that way. With our virtual exhibits, we have anything from exhibits that are currently on display to exhibits that were once on display, and even a couple of exhibits that would have been nice to put on display, but we have the images, we just didn't have the space.
Right.
And that's one of the great advantages I see for what's going on right now with the Money Museum. We have a limited space. We have about 5,000 square feet to put displays on. The problem with that is I've got so many different stories and there's so many coins in the ANA collection that we could take easily 20 or 30,000 square feet and still not be finished. to tell the, you know, we could tell the whole story of numismatics and everything you could want, but that's not practical. It costs too much money, too much space. The cloud or the web, on the other hand, provides unlimited space. And my goal is that as time goes on, every exhibit we do will be added to our website, which will create a truly rich environment. Eventually, this will stand in place of having the standard listings of collections that you see, like the, you know, the ANA window into the collection, or the ANS collections, where you search for specific items or certain dates, and you can have items that are in the collection that pop up, and usually they'll have an image and they'll have a basic description. To me, those become much more meaningful, at least to a general audience, if they're put into the context of a story. And that's what an exhibit is about. It's a story about why something's important, how it fits in.
Right. It's a great way to tell a story, and you're not constrained by space in terms of physical space or the amount of space you can spend conveying information, right? In a physical museum, you might have a 5x7 card, but in the virtual world, you can have without limit. I know everything is finite, but you can go on at greater length and explain more things. And one thing that's nice, you mentioned virtual exhibits for exhibits that are no longer on display. And that's a real reassurance, because how many times have I discovered a new interest in something and found that there was a great exhibit about it, but that was 2 years ago and it's now gone. So now there's a record of it so that it can endure. And then another cool thing is that whatever you find that you're interested in, there's so many other things right there. So if something catches your attention, you can search the entire collection and find additional items with additional information about them. So the ability to make those links, that's what the internet does. And that's what it was originally intended to do, is make those sorts of connections with different sources of information. And looking at the virtual displays of the Money Museum is a really nice example of that.
Absolutely. One of the things that I find really exciting about this is the possibility of making available these items that otherwise most people would never get a chance to see. Not that many people get a chance to come to Colorado Springs and view the museum. And even if we were in a different location, that would still be true. It's one of those things where people don't often get the chance to travel a lot to different areas to see museums and specific things that are interesting to them and their hobbies. The web allows us to do this and provides a way to see more than you would get to see off in many cases in real life. One of the things that occurred a few years ago that I thought was very interesting, a brilliant idea, I thought, was a book came out called The Numismaturist by a guy named Howard Berlin. Somebody I know very well. He's a very interesting guy. He has the opportunity to travel all over the world on a regular basis. And he makes a point that in whatever city or country he goes to, he locates where the numismatic sites of interest are, either the Mint or if there's a museum or the National Bank, he will stop by and find out about them. And about 10 years ago, he printed a book called The Numismaturist that's a photos or blue book for numismatic sites of interest all over the world. It's a great idea. I told him at one point that I was upset that he came up with it, because I thought of it before then. I just never had the time to go and do this stuff. But he did a brilliant job and created a great work. Doing things like what the ANA has been doing with the Money Museum is making that kind of information something available to the average person, and not just to the person that is lucky enough to be able to travel all over the world. And I'm hoping that we can become a model for that kind of thing.
Numismatic tourism is always enjoyable. It's a nice structure, I find, whenever I'm traveling. And that's true with virtual travels as well. And the idea of going around the world and seeing the sites in that spirit, some of the places that I enjoy visiting online, and many of them I've been to in person and some of them I haven't. So It's a nice opportunity to see things I might not have otherwise seen or haven't been able to see in a while. I always enjoy going to the website of the Smithsonian National Numismatic Collection because there's so much great stuff there, as you well know, having worked there for such a long period of time. Lots of great things that are on display. I also think of it as partly my collection, since it's the nation's collection. I have 1/300,000,000th approximately of that collection, so a little bit of ownership, but mostly just enjoying seeing things that you wouldn't be able to see anywhere else. And another area that I've looked at related to the Smithsonian, a lot of their archive material is online, and there's been a big online display recently about the correspondence of Frank Gasparo, who was chief engraver of the United States and who designed the reverse of the Kennedy half dollar. He designed the Eisenhower dollar. He designed the Susan B. Anthony dollar, among many other medals and some unreleased designs. That's been really fascinating to take a look at. And then other places around the world, the British Museum, the Bank of Canada Currency Museum is a favorite. I love visiting there, and their online collection is amazing. And then also websites for auction houses and coin dealers. There's a lot of great imagery there. 15 or 20 years ago, this was not the case. You might deal with black and white photos or just text listings. But now, pretty much anything that goes on sale, there's an image attached to it, and a lot of really high quality images. And again, in a large scale, so it's not, if you're looking at a quarter, you're not looking at something that's 1 inch in diameter. It like fills your whole screen. So it's really great to see auction catalogs and those sorts of descriptions and imagery out there in the virtual world of numismatics.
Yeah, that's one of the great opportunities that has arisen also within a relatively short period of time. Places like CNG and Heritage and Stacks, they have auction catalogs that increasingly over the last 5 years have been made available. Actually, in some cases, archives go further back, much further back. But in most cases, by signing up and becoming a member, not necessarily having to pay anything, you can get access to information that is incredible. If you're interested in collecting any particular area, you can find the incredible rarities as well as some other materials. And more importantly, they're professionally written up by experts on the material. So you can learn more than you could learn just a few years ago. And in many cases, the information is better than the current references, because the references might be 20 years out of date or 30 years out of date or more. So it's a very interesting area. In my case, one of my interests is Parthian coins. So these are ancient coins, part of the ancient Greek series, that were produced in Iraq and Iran from the 3rd century BC up until the 2nd century AD. And the information on these coins has been changing so much in the last 10 years that there is no current work that covers the whole series really well. There's some great old standbys, but the new stuff is so new that it's not been published except in auction catalogs. So you can go to certain auction catalogs and find the latest information in a way that's just not available otherwise.
Yeah, they're great references. I often look at I have the auction catalog of the Norweb collection of Canadian coins, which is among the best references on Canadian coins that I've seen. It compiles information that it may be out there elsewhere, but it's not compiled in one place except for this auction catalog. And I always enjoy reading the descriptions of the coins or currency being sold. And I imagine that the cataloger, I don't think this really exists, but I imagine that they have a numismatic thesaurus as they think about all the different ways to describe what people are seeing when they see the coin. So yeah, whether it's museums or auction houses or dealers or countless other websites out there that convey information from clubs or individuals, there's a lot to see.
That's it for this edition of 2Bits Coins and Currency. Thank you for listening, and remember to go to money.org/podcast to find out more about this podcast and the American Numismatic Association.